And we're holding on Lamed Vav, Amud Aleph, the 11th line by the two dots. We learned in the Mishnah, we were still discussing a bunch of things that I'm Bnei Tikkun HaOlam, because we had earlier ones that involved Gittin, so now we're talking about other ones. So another one is V'ha'edim Chosmin Ala Get Bnei Tikkun HaOlam. Witnesses sign a get, and here a get doesn't just mean specifically a get, it means more generally a shtar, Bnei Tikkun HaOlam, in order to keep things, in order to fix things up for the world. In other words, that it should be easy to validate the document that their signatures are on. So now anything that's Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam is a Takana de Rabban. And so we had various ones. We had the Takanas of Rav Gamliel HaZaken. Rashi explained this one is also from Rav Gamliel HaZaken. And then there's Prusbul, which we're going to talk about next. But the Gemara asked, Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam, what do you mean it's Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam, which implies that it's de Rabban? Daraisa hu. It's actually a din daraisa that that Edim sign a document. The pasuk that the Gemara is quoting is actually not from Chumash, it's from Nevi'im, but still, sometimes the Gemara will use Midaraisa more loosely to mean anything that says in Tanakh. So you have a section, a chapter in Sefer Yirmiyah, where Hashem tells him, we read part of it as Av Torah for Parashas Bahar, but Hashem tells Yirmiyah to go to buy a field that his relative Hanama ben Shalom has to sell. So Hashem tells Yirmiyah to buy it and then to store away the document for safekeeping for a long time, because even though now it's about to be the Churban, the Babylonians are already about to conquer and destroy Yerushalayim. Nevertheless, there's going to be a future. The Jewish people are going to come back and rebuild Eretz Yisrael, and houses and fields and real estate and will be bought and sold in Eretz Yisrael again. So Hashem tells him, in the future, there'll also be this kind of thing that people will be buying fields, v'chosei v'sefer, and they'll be writing in a document, v'chosoim, and they'll be signing. So we see that. Already you have that concept in a. You have that concept in a pasuk already. So what are you telling me? It's a takana de rabbanon v'tikun olam. The answer is Omer Rabba leitzricha l'Rabba Lazer. So the answer is Rabba says you're right, but the Or Mishnah would be needed only according to Rabba Lazer. Dama edim asira karti. He would say, as we've been learning throughout the Masechta, that it's the edim who watch the get or whatever shtar being given over. That caused the cutting off. As we said, when does the get become valid according to the Belazer? Only when you have Edim watch it being given over. So according to that, so the Chachamim arranged that that the Edim should also sign the get. How is it? It could happen that the Edim die. And then you have no proof whether you so then you don't have any proof. You don't have anybody. You don't have the Edim Asira anymore to be able to testify that they watched the get being given over. So at least like this, you have the Edim Chasima as a backup. You're able to ask. Generally speaking, after all, a get or any other shtar, usually where it's signed is where it's delivered. So you can have the so if you can't find the Edim Asira because they died, for example, then fine, you find the Edim Chasima and you ask them, and they're able to tell you what happened over there. So you have that Inami Zimna da Aslan Dinas Yam, or even if the Edim who watched it being given over don't die, they might go off to Medina Sayyam, and again, you're not able to get a hold of them, so therefore. So now at least the husband, so without that, the husband might be able to claim, I didn't divorce her because there's no Edim Asira. So at least if you have the Edim Chasima, then it's they're available kind of as backup. So that's the Mepe Tikkun HaOlam. That's one answer. Rav Yosef Amar after the Tamil Rav Meir. Rav Yosef says you could actually say our Mishnah is like Rav Meir as well. He says Edim Chasima Kauti, so according to him, Midaraisa already, a get needs to be signed. But the point is, what the Mishnah means, if we say that the Mishnah is appointed a mayor, is not that they sign at all. You're right, appointed a mayor, a get would have to be signed in the first place, but that they should specify their names in the get, in order to keep things running smoothly for the world. Kedetani, as we learn in a Braisa, Barishona Hoyakosiv Ani Ploini Chasamti Aid, originally, before Rav Gamliel HaZaken's Takana, people would just write, I, Pliny, signed as an aide. Now, there's several different ways of understanding what the Gemara means by that. Does the word Pliny not belong over here? And it means he would just write ani aid. He would write ani chasamti aid. I am signing as an aid without saying his name at all. So then, according to that, Rashi explains the point is. So how do you know who it was? You have to go start comparing between other shtaris and see if you find another one where the handwriting matches, and then validate it that way. It becomes a lot harder without having the actual name there. There's a different Gusa in Rashi that says that he would actually write the word Pliny. He would write ani Pliny chasamti aid but either way, the point is he wouldn't specify his name at all. There is a different explanation from the Beis Shmuel, one of the major Noisa Kalim on Evan Ezer. He says that what it means is before the Takana, all he had to do was write his first name. But after Rav Gamliel Zaken's Takana, in addition, he writes his father's name. So he doesn't just write Ani Moshe Aid or something like that. He writes Ani Moshe Ben Shmuel Aid or whatever. And that way it becomes easier. There are a lot of Moshes around, let's say, but there are fewer Moshe Ben Shmuels. So that way, at least it narrows down who was that person. And therefore that smooths things out. So originally before that takana, im ksav yoda yotzim makam achar, if there was another sample of his handwriting available on a different shtar or that Beis Din had on file or whatever, then it would be kosher v'im lav posel. And if not, then it was posel because then they couldn't be sure that whose signature it was and whether it was validated. So Rashi points out now you can do that. One of the ways that you can validate a shtar is by comparing with a different shtar that was already miskayim in Beis Din. So you have, let's say, Rashi points out from the Gemara in Ksubas, you have a shtar that was objected to, where somebody claimed, for example, it was forged or whatever, and it was brought to Beis Din, and the signatures were validated. They did kiyum shtaris, and Beis Din writes a kiyum on it. So now, in the future, you can use that as a basis for validating other shtaris, nevertheless, without the names at all, according to the way we have it in Rashi, or according to without the name and the father's name, according to the Beis Shmuel, it was much harder to be able to do that. Omer Rav Gamliel, takona gdola hiskinu. So Rav Gamliel says they made a great takona. That they should specify their names in the Gittin in order to fix things up for the world. Now, therefore, it becomes much easier to know who it was that actually signed the shtar, and then it's easy enough. You don't need to find a copy of their signature on file. You have another much easier way of being a kaim shtar. Go find their friends. Go find and have them come to Beis Din and testify that they recognize the signature. So therefore, that streamlines things a lot. So we have Rav Gamliel saying takona gdola hiskinu. So that the pashtus, what that means is this is Rav Gamliel de Yavne, the grandson of Rav Gamliel Azokin, saying that in the previous generation, they, meaning as Rashi said on the Mishnah, his own grandfather, Rav Gamliel Azokin, had made this takona mipnei tikkun olam. So that works even according to the mayor that says Edi Chasim Akarti. Beforehand, you didn't need the names at all, or you needed was some writing of theirs, or before that, all you needed was their first names, and now you have their first names and their father's name in their own handwriting. The name of the city, that was also the name of the city is something else. We're talking about the signatures on the gift.
The famous
city came later on, or came the same time? No, the city is something else. That's I think the Ramban learns that writing the city is required even Daraisa, but anyway. Okay, so the Gemara asks, "Uvi siman aloi?" So you're telling me that to write a simon instead of a person's name is not good enough? Because what are we saying before Rav Gamliel Azokin's Takana? In effect, what we're doing is just that. We're using kind of a simon. The person is writing ani pliny aid or ani aid or whatever, and then we have to go find examples of that handwriting to compare to. But is that in fact the case that even now after the Takana, a person can't use a simon of a distinctive monogram or whatever that a particular person uses? V'harav tsayu kavra, we find that Rav, instead of a signature, would draw a picture of a fish. Rav Chanina tsayu charusa. Rav Chanina would draw a picture of a branch of a palm tree. A Rav Chista samach. Rav Chista would sign with just the letter samach of the pashtos of the name Chista. But wait, Rav Hoshia ayin. Rav Hoshia would sign just using a letter ayin again from his name. Rabba Barabhuna tsayu makusa, and Rabba Barabhuna would draw the sail of a ship. So all of them just drew a picture instead of writing their names, and that was considered an acceptable signature as well. Now, why would they use Davka these pictures? So this Gemara is also in Bava Basra, when in connection with the Dinim of Shtaris, and the Rashbam says they're not trying to find a reason why they use these pictures. You could make up whatever reason you want, but with Pashtos, it was like their monogram or something. With that said, there are Mephoshim who give reasons for it. There's ideas that go back even, I think, to the Gaonim that talk about it, and the Rabbi Yaakov Emden on our Gemara in particular explains each one of them in more detail. He says Rab drew a fish to represent that Ayin Hara shouldn't have any effect on him, just like we know the fish are immune to Ayin Hara because they're covered by water. Rav Chanina would draw a branch of a palm tree to represent that, like Tzadik Katamo Yifrach. Rav Chista would do a samach, not only a samach, a letter of his name, but samach also means to rely on. So it means that he was hinting with that you can rely on what it says in this shtar. Similarly, Rav Hoshia would put an ayin to represent not only ayin as a letter in his name, but it also means ayin as in an eye. I've looked carefully over this shtar, and you can trust what it says in it. And Rav Barav Huna drawing the sail of a ship represents that he's the captain of the ship of the Jewish people. Anyway, the point is, so we see that in all those cases, they didn't write their name. They just wrote like this kind of monogram, and that was considered good enough. The answer is Shani Rabbanan de Beki and Simanayu. It's different with the Chachamim. Their monograms, their shapes that they draw like that are well known. So it's one thing, in other words, if some guy goes and writes on a get and writes Ani Ploini Eid, or even he writes his first name, Ani Yaakov Eid or whatever, go find which Yaakov it was. But when you have the Chachamim, and it's a known thing that this Chacham draws a fish and that one draws a ship and so forth, so it's well known, and that's good enough as the equivalent of a name, of a full name and father's name.
That's a Vedas.
As Eidos or as Dayanim, respectively, yeah. So you want to ask, Me'ikra b'may afkinu? Okay, well, you're telling me the signatures or the monograms of the Chachamim are well known. Fine. How in the first place did they make it publicized that these are their signatures? And the answer is Bediski, using other kinds of shtaris. So, for example, Rashi explains they would be writing, for example, letters of Shilas Atrumas, or just letters as you when you want to write a letter to somebody and sign at the bottom that way. And after a while, it became well known. This is Rav's monogram. This is Rav Chista's monogram, and so forth. And therefore, now when they see that later on a shtar of Beis Din, whether they're signed as an aid or as a dayan, then people will know that this is their signature. And now, if there's ever any question about the validity of the signature, they don't need to go and find an example of that. They don't need to go and find another shtar that has that signature. They can call in people who knew Rav or Rav Chanina or whoever, and have them validate. Yes, this is their monogram. So it still works. Okay, we said in the Mishnah Hilo Hiskin Pruspol Fola. We said another takana mepnei tikkun olam is that Hilo came up with the concept of the Pruspol. Now there is actually an interesting machlokas rishonim regarding this. What exactly was Hillel Masakin? So now we're going to discuss in detail. What about the details of a Pruzbol. But is it that Minatora so what are we saying? The Pruzbol is basically you're saying to the Dayanim that I'm giving you over my shtaris, I'm giving you over my debts, that you collect them on my behalf. So now Rashi learns, or at least this is how the Rishonim understand Rashi, that midaraisa such a thing wouldn't work. We're talking about that Hillel made a takana that on the face of it completely overrides something daraisa. And the Gemara is going to discuss soon how exactly he could do that. How could Hillel take away something daraisa? But there are different other understandings. Another understanding is, and Tosfos, another Rishonim discuss it over here, is that midaraisa, you would actually have to physically give them your shtaris. Hillel's takana is you don't have to actually give it to them. You're just writing out a document, or even as the Gemara is going to talk about later, making a verbal declaration that I'm giving you over my chovis, and that would be Hillel's takana. And a third possibility Tosfos mentions over here is that, of course, the whole thing would work daraisa. Sure, even just saying. The point is, until then, it wasn't a fixed thing, every shmita, that people do that. According to that, what Hillel made the takana is that people should be doing it on a regular basis. Not just if they feel like it, but rather it should be a standard thing that every shmita people come to Beis Din and do that. So Tananahal, some we learn in a Mishnah in Shvius. The last parak of Shvius deals with these dinim of loans and shmitas ksofim and prusbol and all that. So the Mishnah says prusbol einim ashamet. This is one of those things that Hillel Azokin made the takanah. He saw that people were avoiding lending one another because they figured that it's going to get canceled by Shemitah. So he sees they're being over on what it says in the Torah. Be careful that there might be a matter of blial, which means Rashi in various places, on that pasuk and other places, explains that it means bli oil without the yoke of Yiras Shemayim. I mean, the point is, there shouldn't be an evil thought in a person's mind saying, as the pasuk goes on to say, you're going to say, Shemitah is almost coming and I don't want to lend you money. So people were being over on that. Omer v'hiskin prusbol. So Hillel went and made the takana of prusbol. And again, you have those few different ways of understanding what exactly the takana was. Did he create something completely out of to completely new, or did he extend something that already existed, minatura, and just gave it greater applicability by saying that you don't have to actually physically give over the shtaris, or by saying b'chlal that people should do this on a regular basis? Continues the Mishnah. V'zehu gufoi shel prusbol. What is the essential formula of the prusbol? Is Maisrani lachem ploini, dayonin shem makom ploini. I'm handing over to you ploini. It's really supposed to be ploini or ploini, whatever. The dayonim in such and such a place. Shekol chayv sheyeshli etzo ploini. That any debt that I have against ploini, she'egbenu calls man she'erza, that I should be able to collect it whenever I want, even after Shemitah. We learned actually a few days ago that the Mishnah only mentions ploini or ploini, dayonim shem makom ploini. That was what we had the machlokas Reb Nachman and Reb Sheshes, whether in the case of prusbol and also in the case of bitul get, is it enough to have two, as Reb Nachman said, or do you need three, as Reb Sheshes said? So the Gemara said Reb Nachman had brought a proof from this Mishnah. It only says ploini or ploini, dayonim. So you see, two is enough, whereas Reb Sheshes says, come on, the Tana doesn't have to say ploini or ploini or ploini. It doesn't have to be like a peddler announcing everything. He says ploini or ploini. You're meant to understand it's the regular composition of a Beis Din. Anyway, okay, so the Gemara asks, Mika Midi, how is it possible that midaraisa shvius should cancel debts and Hillel is making a takana that you don't do that? So Tosfos points out the question. Now, for one thing, the Gemara could answer, and in fact, the Gemara is going to use that as one possible answer soon, that Hefker based in Hefker. Beis Din has very broad powers when it comes to dinim amanus. Still, the Gemara is bothered in the Havam, and at least by the idea, still, why is the fact is it is a din daraisa. The Chacham are not just going to willy-nilly go and be mevatel things daraisa because Hefker based in Hefker. So why would he do that? And then Tosfos goes on to point out that point is that we said before that one of the three ways of understanding prusbol is that midaraisa, in fact, all of this would have worked even before Hillel's takana, and just why is he telling people to do that on a regular basis? Where there, in effect, the whole concept of shmitas ksofim almost becomes a dead letter because of that, because now everybody just makes a prusbol, and as we're going to discuss further in the Gemara, there are a lot of kulis in it, and therefore the result is people barely even realize that there's a concept of shmitas ksofim anymore. So why would Hillel do that? So Omar Abaya, b'shvius b'zman hazeh v'rebi. So Abaye says, you're right. Hillel's takana would only work for Shmita nowadays. And and he agrees with what Rebbe says. Rebbe, of course, was generations later, but that it means that with the concept that later on Rebbe expressed, Hillel already knew in his time, and he's basing his takana on that. But only nowadays where Shvius is Dirabanan. Now, Hillel lived when the second Beis Mikdash was still standing. Nonetheless, since in Abaya holds that during the time of the second Beis Mikdash, the Yovel was not Noyeg, therefore Shmita is also not considered Daraisa, because the Yovel exists Midaraisa only when all the Shvatim, or only when all the Jewish people, all the Shvatim, are living in Eretz Yisrael. And in Hillel's times already, it was several hundred years after Sancheiriv had taken the Aseres HaShvatim into Golos, and most of them didn't return. So therefore, at that point then, Yovel was not Noyig, only Shmita. So Rashi brings actually, there are two possibilities. Now there is a Gemara. There is a Gemara in Erchin that says that even during the second Beis Mikdash, they still counted the years of Yovel, but they didn't do it in order to determine when Yovel itself is, but only to determine when Shmita is, because they held, according to the opinion of the Chachamim, which the Rambam brings the halacha, that Yovel interrupts the counts of Shmitas. So therefore, every 50 years, you have to know would have been a Yovel, and therefore Shmita, the next Shmita, is delayed by 1 year.
It starts the
51st year, and the next Shmita is the 57th, right. Rashi, though, also brings, on the other hand, from Toras Koyanim, from Sifra, that says that, no, Shvius is Noyig, even when Yovel is not. So Rashi says, okay, evidently there's a Machlokas Tanoim, whether Shmita applies when there's no Yovel. But so we're saying over here that Shmita was not Noyig in Hillel's times. Now Tosfos discusses that in some detail. For one thing, the Gemara is not really the Gemara is going to bring over here a limud to show that Shmita's karka and Shmita's ksofim depend one on the other, and when you don't have one, you don't have the other. But shouldn't we be bringing something to say that to show that Shmita itself, that Shmita's karka was not daraisa at the time? The Gemara is saying that almost as though it's a known thing that there was no Shmita's karka at the time, and therefore Ben Rebbe holds that Shmita's ksofim depends on that. So Tosfos discusses actually that no, when we talk about Shmita's karka in our Gemara, we don't mean, like Rashi says, the fact that you don't have to, the fact that you can't work the land during Shmita. That may be still applied. Hashmita's karka means over here the fact that you return land to the original owners during Yovel. So then according to Rashi, what the Gemara is saying is that the issur to work the land during Shmita and the issur to collect your debts after Shmita, the fact that the loans are canceled, are both, those are interdependent, according to Rebbe. And it will held like that. So therefore, when there's no Shmita's karka, daraisa, then there's no Shmita's ksafim either. Tosfos is saying that no, Shmita's karka means when there's no mitzvah of returning the fields in Yovel, because Yovel itself doesn't apply unless, again, most of the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael. So according to Rashi, in other words, the chain is like this. There's no Yovel nowadays because most of the Shvatim are not in Eretz Yisrael. Because of that, there's no Shmita's karka, as in the Isser to work the land, Daraisa. The Isser to work the land during Shmita nowadays is only Drabbanon. And because of that, Shmita's Ksafim is also only Drabbanon, and therefore Hillel can override it with the principle. Ksafim means money. According to Tosfos, rather, the chain of logic is forget about not working the land. That may actually still be in effect Daraisa. But we don't have nowadays Hashmatas Karka, as in the mitzvah to return fields to their owners in Yovel, and therefore we don't have, and therefore Rebbe holds, and Hillel agrees with that, that Shmitas Ksafim, that canceling debts goes along with that, and therefore you don't have that either. So then Tosfos goes into some discussion about the question, was Yovel in effect during the second Beis Mikdash? And Tosfos brings evidence, Rabbi Natan brings evidence in Tosfos that Yovel was in fact Noyeg in the time of the second Beis Mikdash. So therefore, according to that, Tosfos ends up saying that it means when Hillel made this takana, what he meant was, should it happen that the Beis Mikdash is destroyed and then Yovel ceases to exist, then at that point, Prusbo will go into effect. According to that, it would mean he didn't actually make it in his times, because when he passed away, the Beis Mikdash was still standing.
Preparing.
But he was preparing for the eventuality that it would be. So and then Tosfos goes on to say that actually how would Yovel have been in effect in the second Beis Hamikdash if we said they were taken into Golos, the Aseret HaShvatim were taken into Golos by Sancheiriv? So Tosfos brings the famous thing that Yirmiyahu brought many of them back, and Yoshiyahu ruled over them as well. So there were in fact members of all 12 Shvatim over there. So that's enough for it to be considered Kol Yoshvei Aleha. And Tosfos finishes off and says, "Zil Kori Bei Rabhu." You can actually go read in the pasuk. You can go ask a kid in Cheder, and he'll tell you that in Ezra it mentions all 12 Shvatim. Now it actually doesn't. There isn't a pasuk in Ezra that says in so many words that all 12 Shvatim were there. And in fact, there are Achronim who say that what Tosfos means to say is it doesn't mention that all 12 Shvatim were there. It mentions Yehuda and Binyamin, and then it mentions others, but it doesn't go into detail about the other Shvatim. What it is so one thing is, in Ezra, it mentions that when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash, 42,000 and some Jews came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and it lists them by families. The family of this family or this clan or whatever was this number of hundred people. This one was this couple of dozen people, etc. And so you have, if you count up the numbers over there, the families from Yehuda and Binyamin and the Kohenim and Leviim and the Sinim and whatnot, you come out to around 29 or 30,000. What happened to the missing 12 or 13,000? Rashi brings over there from Chazal that those were from other Shvatim. So therefore it comes out there actually were members of all the other Shvatim over there, and that would justify saying that Yovel existed during the second Beis Hamikdash. So you have according to Rashi then, Yovel did not exist in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, and it's Machloikas Tanoyim whether in turn Shmita depends on that or not. According to Tosfos, Yovel did exist in the second Beis Hamikdash, but we're saying that
there are two possibilities. Either the first possibility in Tosfos is Yovel indeed did not exist in the second Beis Hamikdash because they didn't have Kol Yoshvei Aleha.
Therefore, there was no mitzvah of returning fields in Yovel. Therefore, there's no Shmitas Ksafim. Or Rabbi Natam's understanding, there was Yovel in the second Beis Hamikdash. However, How Hillel's Takana is not for when the Beis Hamikdash is standing. It's meant to go into effect when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. The Rambam, when he brings these halachas, he learns more like Rashi and like Tosfos' first possibility. They didn't have Yovel during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. It wasn't actually in effect. They did do what Rashi mentions from that Gemara in Eichin, Monu Yovel's the Kaddish Shmittin. They would enumerate what year is Yovel in order to know when the next Shmittah is, because the next Shmittah will be delayed by a year because of that. Only after the Churban, the Rambam says, then we hold like the opinion that says that Yovel doesn't interrupt the Shmittah count. And then that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore we have Shmittahs every 7 years without a break. And therefore, so the vote would be, again, because Yovel is the Rabbanan nowadays, therefore, Shmittas Ksafim, and therefore Hillel's Takana is in effect only at a time like that. But when Shmittah goes back into effect Daraisa, then in fact the Prusbo won't work. So the Gemara says, but Rebbe. So Hillel's opinion, according to that, follows what Rebbe says. The Tanya, Rebbe Omer.
The fear of not letting the silver be there, even when the first ball goes away.
Well, so then again, right. So according to Rashi, that means that the people are going to have to be more careful. They're not to be over on that Hisham Lacham Paniya Dabal and Bavla. According to Tosfos, there's two possibilities. Either it means, fine, they can still continue doing what was valid Daraisa to actually give those shtaris to Beis Din, but they actually have to give them rather than just saying or writing a declaration or whatever. And according to the other possibility, they may not even need to do that. They'll just have to continue. They can continue doing it on this regular basis every 7 years. Whereas before Hillel's Takana, they would just do it whenever they felt like it. So Rebbe says, "V'zed dvar haShmita shomayt." The pasuk says, "This is the matter of the Shmita. Let go of all the debts that you owed," implying the Shmita shomayt b'shtei Shmita sakasim medaber. Therefore, we learn from that the pasuk is talking about two different kinds of Shmita. Achas Shmitas Karka v'achas Shmitas Ksafim. One is a Shmita that involves the land, and the other is a Shmita that involves money.
So bisman shat mishamet karka mishamet ksafim. Only when you're letting go of the land, then you also have to let go of debts. Bisman sheiyat mishamet karka iyat mishamet ksafim. But if you're not letting go of the land, then you're not obligated to let go of debts either. So therefore, Hillel's takana would apply at a time like that. Again, according to Rashi. And according to the according to Rabbeinu Tam in Tosfos, Shmita over here means not to means the actual the mitzvah to not work the land. So when that's not in effect, when that's Dirabanan, then so is Shmita's Ksafim. According to the other possibility in Tosfos, Shmita's Kauka over here means the mitzvah of Yovel to return the land to its owner, to its original owner. So then, so meanwhile, at some previous time, the Chachamim had made the takana that they should still have Shmitas Ksafim as a zecher for Shvius Daraisa, so they don't forget the mitzvah altogether. So now he will see that people are avoiding lending one another. So now he made the takana of Prusbel. So according to that, then, the whole thing at that point was Dirabanan. And therefore, and therefore, Hillel can override it with another takana derabon.
It was already derabon.
That's what we're saying. Tosfos actually asks in that case if the Chachamim are already making a zecher for Shvius Daraisa, why don't they make a zecher for Yovel as well? And the answer is Tosfos says because one thing of Yovel is you can't work the fields either. It would be very hard for people to have to make do 2 years in a row not work the fields. That would be too hard on them. So therefore, the Chacham didn't find it necessary to make a to make a zecher for Yovel.
That's how Hashem said it.
No, when it applies to Araisa, when you have all 12 Shvatim in Eretz Yisrael and Yovel applies to Araisa, sure. But when the Shvatim are not mostly in Eretz Yisrael and the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, that the Chachamim should make according to what Abaye is saying over here, Shmita nowadays is only the Rabbanim. And there is, by the way, you have the famous Heter Mechira that takes place in Eretz Yisrael every 7 years where they sell the agricultural lands to a goy, and that way the Rabbanut gives a Heter that way for people to be able to work the land during Shemitah. So when it was first proposed, the Rabbi Yitzchok Kohanim Spector first supported the idea back in the 1880s when the communities in Eretz Yisrael were just getting the agricultural towns in Eretz Yisrael were just getting started, and if they have to do a whole year without working the land, they're going to go bankrupt anyway. So it was a very controversial thing at the time. But one of the arguments that has been brought in its favor is based on our Gemara over here that Shemitah nowadays is only Dirabanan anyway. So it's easier to override it with something like that. If you hold that Shvius nowadays is Daraisa, then you have much less leeway for that. Anyway, the point is, Tosfos is saying, even if you say that Shmita nowadays is only Dirabanan, the point is then, so why don't we make a Yovel Dirabanan? And the reason is because that would involve people not being able to work their lands for 2 years straight, and that would be too difficult on people. Yeah, what'd you say?
How can you sell land to a goy? A goy is not supposed to own
that's
land.
That's a whole different question. And that indeed is there's been entire sfarim written on this whole thing of the Heter Mechira, whether it's allowed, whether it's not allowed, various possible things with it. We know, for example, so Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was in favor of it. Rav Kook was in favor of it, and he wrote a whole sefer on the subject. On the other hand, for example, it's known the Chazon Ish, for example, was very against it. Minhag Chabad is also, I don't think that we rely on the Chabad Rabbanim have also said not to rely on it. Among the many, many, many arguments, pro and con, yes, one of them is this point: how can you sell the land of Eretz Yisrael to a goy? Yeah. The counter argument being that they're doing it in order to keep the Jewish farms in Eretz Yisrael financially solvent. So therefore, it's like you're doing it in order to help them stay in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, there wouldn't be that issue.
That's selling to a goy. That's ongoing during.
No. The concept of lois hachanim applies always. Applies always. Yeah. But there is an enormous amount of a lot of ink has been spilled on both sides on all the different sides. Right, of course, it's sold only for Shemitah, like the way we sell Mecheres Chametz. Exactly right. Yeah.
There is no consensus on that.
So there's no consensus. That's why you have some people, the Rabbanut will arrange the Heter Mechira every 7 years. They have it's almost like self-renewing. It's almost like one of those self-renewing things like we're used to every year before Pesach. We sell our chametz to the goyim in the same way they have this every 7 years thing. But then you have, again, there are many Rabbanim who disagree with the whole concept and won't rely on it to work their field. There are many, many, many Jews in Eretz Yisrael, Taka, don't rely on it and don't work their fields during Shemitah. And many others who themselves aren't farmers don't buy heter mechira produce and don't so they're it's one of those things that eventually and they will decide once and for all what the din with it is. Anyway,
don't have to worry about it.
Well, then we don't have to worry about it also because call Madonna Mitzvah and Kofra. Yeah, fine, but anyway, but they'll figure out theoretically how it should be. All right?
Then
the Shemitah will be Daraisa again. Also, that's another point. Yeah, that's true. Anyway, so okay, so all that is one answer. Still, the Gemara asks to me committed to Daraisa la Mishamta Shvius the Takinu Rabbanan the Tashmit. Still, though, within Abaye's answer. So, what are you telling me? That Daraisa that Shvius is not canceling a debt. And the Chachamim should say that the debt is canceled. They're saying Zeichel the Shvius. How do the Chachamim have the ability to do that? So Rav Omar, Omar Abaye Sheval Tasahu. The answer is because Abaye says they're not telling you to actually to go do something against Daraisa. All they're telling you is Sheval Tasa. Don't go and don't go return the debt. They're telling the lender you normally would have a mitzvah Daraisa of paying back your debt. Now, in this case, we're telling you, don't do that. Just passively go and don't return it. And that was the din. And then when Hillel comes up with the prusbul, so now once he makes the prusbul, so it sort of restores the original thing that the loiva has a mitzvah to pay off his debt. But until then, they have the ability to do it because Shev Val Tasa. On the other hand, Rava Omer Hefker based in Hefker. Rava gives a different answer. The Chachamim were able to do that because Hefker based in Hefker. Now, in a way, Rava's answer is actually doing double duty over here. First of all, it answers what we're saying, how the Chachamim could be Oiko something than a Torah, because Hefker based in Hefker. But second of all, Rashi says, more to the point, is Rava's answer refers back to, we asked before, how is Hillel able to make the Takana of Prusbul? Where we said that if Shvius is Daraisa, then how could he do that? And the answer, Abaye's answer was that Shvius, that Shmita Ksofim nowadays only did Rabbanon. Rava says, never mind that. Even the Chachamim who disagree with Rebbe and say that Shmita nowadays is Daraisa, and therefore Shmita Ksofim is Daraisa, nevertheless, when it comes to a Dovashim Mammon, the Chachamim have power, Hefker based in Hefker, to say that we're taking away the money that ought to belong to Reuven and assign it to Shimon instead, and therefore that's what Hillel was able to accomplish with the Prusbul. Midaraisa, Shimon would have been able to keep his money and not return it. Midrabanan, now that the Prusbul was made, then he has to give it back to Reuven. So Hefker based in Hefker. De Omer of Yitzchok, Minayin Shehefker based in Hefker. Where do we know that concept of Hefker based in Hefker? Shenemar, you find in Sefer Ezra. So Ezra is dealing with a problem. There's a lot of Jews have intermarried, have married Goyish wives. So Ezra and the Sanhedrin announces that everybody has to gather for a mass gathering in Yerushalayim, and we're going to take care of this matter once and for all. And they announce, V'chol asher, everybody has to be here in 3 days' time, they announce, V'chol asher lo yobu the shlosh asher yomim, anybody who doesn't come in 3 days from now, katsas asorim v'azkenim, according to the council, according to the advice of the Sorim and the Skenim, which are the members of the Sanhedrin, Yochram called Rechusha, anybody who doesn't show up, all of his property will be declared Cherem, and it will all be forfeited, and he will be separated from the congregation of the Goyla, meaning he'll be put in Cherem. So Yochram called Rechusha means based and will have the right to expropriate all his Rechush because he didn't listen to the instructions of the Sanhedrin and come for this meeting.
I guess they had the power then.
They had the power then, obviously, to do that. Yeah, actually, you have a couple of parakim earlier when Ezra is gathering together his group to go to Eretz Yisrael. So it gives at great length over there a letter that King Artaxasta of Persia gave him. Artaxasta is another name for Dayavish, that among other things, said he has very broad powers to do that, to be able to punish people financially or physically or whatever if necessary. So therefore, yes. Yeah, so now,
you want to take people away from.
So no, because they're still in Eretz Yisrael under the Persian Empire. They're still Persian subjects. They're just now living in Eretz Yisrael and rebuilding the Mishmikdash. Instead of living in Persia or Babel or what have you, in Sheva, Vester, and Medina, they're living in Eretz Yisrael, but they're still subjects of the Persian Empire. So the point is, now Ezra and his Beis Din, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, are able to use this power to threaten that anybody who doesn't show up for this meeting is going to have their property confiscated. So we see, though, obviously Ezra is not doing it because the king gave him permission. That's just what gives him the muscle to be able to do it. The fact that they're making this announcement shows they have power, Al Pi Torah, to do that. He says you have a different pasuk that expresses this. After the psukim in Yeshua describe all the territories that were parceled out to the Shvatim, it says, these are the inheritances that Elazar HaKohen, Yeshua ben Nun, and the heads of the Shvatim apportioned to the various Shvatim. So why the Roshe HaOvos? Why mention Roshe Ha'Ovos? Roshe means the heads, Ovos means the fathers, but usually the expression would be, it actually says Roshe Ha'Matas, the heads of the Shvatim. Why Roshe Ha'Ovos? Loi Malach, it comes to teach you, Ma Ovos Man Chilin Espeneim, Kol Ma Sheyirtzu, just like fathers are able to bequeath to their children whatever they want, Af Roshim Man Chilin Esam, Kol Ma Sheyirtzu, the same way the Roshim, the heads of the Sanhedrin, are able to, the heads of the Beis Din, are able to bequeath to the people whatever they want, meaning that that brings us back to this concept of hefker based in hefker, that they have the ability to take money and assign it as needed. So in fact, the Rashba says the fact that we're learning from that pasuk means even before you could say that once a person has it in his possession, then Beis Din has the right to take it away from him, like we find with Ezra. But to say that before it even came to him, that instead it should be assigned to somebody else, for that we need Rabbi Lazar's pasuk. We see before it even came to a particular shevet, then it could be assigned as the Roshim see fit. And it also includes the point that also not only do they have the right with the pasuk from Ezra, we see they have the right to take away money from somebody. With the pasuk from Sefer Yehoshua, we see they actually have the ability not only to take it away and make it hefker, but to give it to somebody else. Because that's what we're doing over here. They're saying we're taking what would have gone to you, and we decided instead it should go to somebody else. And therefore, on that basis, the prusbul also works, where we're saying you, Shimon, borrowed money, and really the debt ought to be canceled by Shmita, but we're going to allow Reuven to make a prusbul, and therefore he can collect it. So we're going to take away money from you, Shimon, and give it to Reuven, and that works on the grounds of hefker based in hefker.
But he said it won't give the son, it said it'll be hefker to anybody to take it.
No, so that's the thing. So the original.
When he said that everyone has to be in 3 days, not.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. So over there, Ezra was saying if they're not there in 3 days, their property will be confiscated. It's not necessarily going to be given to somebody else, right? It's going to be declared hefker or to become the property of the Beis Din or whatever, yeah. But now we see that they can actually assign it to somebody else, yeah. Okay, so we have two answers how the prusbul works. Again, we have a bias answer that it only works when Shmita is derabanan. And we have Rava's answer that it works on the grounds of hefker based in hefker. The Rambam paskins in this like Abaya, and therefore he says, yeah, when Mashiach comes and Shmita is daraisa again, then the prusbul will no longer have its validity. Okay, so now the Gemara asks, Iboilahu, he hiskin prusbul ledori hu detokun or dimu ledori almanami tokin. Did Hillel make this takana of prusbul only for his generation or also for future generations? There are some of the Rishonim learn. It doesn't mean literally only for his generation. It may mean, because the Gemara is going to discuss the question, whether a Beis Din in a future generation can cancel it or change it or whatever. If we say he made it only for his generation, then of course it automatically expires. So there are Rishonim who learn that the question is, did he make it only for generations like his, meaning whenever we see that people are reluctant to lend money before Shmita, or did he make it as a permanent thing, even if you don't see, even until Mashiach comes, even if you don't see that thing? So they want to ask Lamai Nafkamina, Levatule. The Nafkamina would be, can you be Mevatalit? If they see And there's a time when there's not that problem. Rashi uses the expression achshu dori, if the generation has shown themselves to be kosher and they have no problem of lending money even when it's before Shemitah and they're not worried about it being canceled by Shemitah, should we say we should be mevatel and should we be mevatel hilul takana and say that even if you wrote a prizbul, it won't be effective and the loan will still be canceled? So Iamat Ladori who the talking, if you say he made his takana only for his generation or generations like that, Mimatlinan, they then a later based in can cancel it. Eli Amat Ladori Almanami Takra. Eli Amat Ladori Almanami Tokun, but if you say that he made it for future generations as well across the board, well then we have a problem. Ha ain based in Yochel Levato Dure based in Chavere, one based in cannot cancel something that a previous Beis Din said, a Zera or a Takana of a previous Beis Din, Elim Ken, Godel Hamenu, Vachachmo Vaminyan, unless the later Beis Din is greater in wisdom and in numbers. There's a few different explanations of what numbers means in this connection. Among others, it means the number of Talmudim that Beis Din has. It means that Amram learns that it means the number of Chachamim in that generation who agreed with that Takana. We find all over Shas that it'll say that a Beis Din made a Takana and it wasn't Poshat Beroiv Yisrael. It wasn't accepted by the majority of the Jewish people. So you can have the Beis Din makes a Takana, but many other Chachamim in that time disagree and say that Takana shouldn't have been made. So the more that agree with it is called Min. The point is, a later Beis Din is not going to be greater b'chochma of a minyan than Hillel's Beis Din. So they wouldn't have the ability. They wouldn't have the ability to be mevatel. So Tosfos over here gets into some discussion about when exactly is there the possibility of canceling it. You also have a factor that the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah, poshat b'chol Yisrael, whether the gzeiro has already been accepted by the majority and spread among the majority of the Jewish people. For example, the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah over there that at one point there was a gzeiro d'rabbanan not to use olive oil that had been made by goyim, but eventually Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was mevatel that gzeiro, even though it went back to the time of Daniel. He's not greater than Daniel b'chochmo v'minyan, but the Gemara says over there the gzeiro had never been poshat b'chol Yisrael. It never actually spread. It was never actually that widespread. There were always people in every generation who kept it, but it wasn't a universal thing. The reason was it was one of those things, so as not to assimilate among the goyim. The same way as we have Pasakum and Yain Nesach and whatnot. This was another one of those. Anyway, Tosfos goes into a discussion about that, about how all these factors fit together, and when Tosfos says this, that we're saying that loy poshat yisurei is all, only according to some opinions, would that be a reason to be mevatel gzeira of a previous based in according to other opinions? You also need b'chochma over minyan. In fact, the Gemara mentions over there in Avodah Zarah, and we see also in Yerushalmi over there that takana of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya to undo that gzeira of Daniel was actually very controversial for a while. The Gemara mentions over there that Rav was very reluctant to accept it as a valid din, and Shmuel had to pressure him into accepting it. Tosfos goes on to discuss more things in and out of this. We can say, for example, it's another thing also when they make gzeira, for example, because people were being careless with a mitzvah in a particular place. So then eventually when the people learn more, then you could cancel such a gzeira because it was only made under those temporary circumstances and so forth. And again, Tosfos discusses a number of ins and outs about that. Okay. Anyway, so that's the question. So can a later Beis Din revoke the concept of Prizbul? What's the din? Toshma, the Amar Shmuel. Well, we see that Shmuel says, Loi kasvin and Prizbul, el ibe bei dinah de Surah, ibe bei dinah de Nahardah. Shmuel says you can write a Prizbul only in the Beis Din of Surah or of Nahardah, which are the Bate Dinim headed respectively by Rav and Shmuel. Or the Gemara is going to mention soon other great Bate Dinim like that. That would show, in other words, that Shmuel is saying, after all, what is a Prizbul doing? You're taking away money that would have belonged to the Loiva and giving it to the Malva. Only a great Beis Din like the Beis Din of Rav or of Shmuel has the ability to do that. So you see, in effect, he's saying that Hillel made the Takana only for generations like his own. So therefore, only a great Beis Din, like Hillel's Beis Din, or like a Beis Din like that, has the ability to do that. So be sakadaitach ledore alma nami tokun. If you're going to tell me that Hillel made the takana for future generations as well, b'shabe dinin nami lichtavu. So what's the problem? They should be able to write it in all but dinim, because if it's meant as a permanent thing, then it should be okay to write it in other lesser but dinim as well. And the answer is no. Dilma kitak in Hillel ledore alma. You could answer maybe even fine. Yes, you could say that Hillel made the takana to only for his generation and generations like his, but you could say to begin with, or you could say, no, even if it was made l'dorei alma for all future generations, you could still say part of the original takana was going be dina didei v'chorav ami v'rav asi. You could say he meant only the based in of the caliber of Hillel's own, or for example, in a later generation, of the caliber of Rav Ami and Rav Asi. So Rav Ami and Rav Asi maybe are not as great as Hillel, but still they're the greatest based in of their time. So that would be an example. Da'alimi lafgui mamona, such but the dinim are strong enough to be able to take money from one person and then give to another. Avalakule alman loy, but not necessarily other but the dinim. So you can't see really from Shmuel's statement whether he holds that a prosbol is meant to be only for certain generations. It is meant for all generations, but within that, Shmuel is saying it was to begin with meant to be only in a great based. Tosfos brings in this connection. Now, even if we hold like Shmuel, and we'll discuss soon, we don't necessarily, but even if we do, Tosfos says, Rabbi Natam, for example, would write Prusbolim in his Bastin. He's certainly not of the caliber. He wouldn't consider himself to be of the caliber of Hillel or Shmuel or of Ami and Rabasi. Fine, but he says it just means the Bastin Choshuv Shebadur. The greatest, the most important based in of that generation. And in Rabbeinu Tam's times, that would be his based in. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. De'omah Shmuel, another thing that Shmuel says about the Prusbel, ha Prusbel ulbana de dayonim. A Prusbel is an ulban of the dayonim. Now the Gemara is going to, the word ulban, the Gemara is going to explain soon, means something like an embarrassment or a chutzpah, means something more like a chutzpah. The Gemara is going to define soon what exactly Shmuel means by this statement. But anyway, he says, if I had the strength, I would revoke the whole concept of prosbel. Like Moses, what do you mean? I would cancel it. We just said that you can't cancel an enactment of an earlier based unless you're greater b'chokhm of a minyan. So how is Shmuel even saying when he says yashir cheli means Rashi says im achzik koyach, if I have the strength. In other words, implying I would be mevatel, except that I can't because people are so used to the idea of prosbel. What do you mean? He can't do that anyway because he's not greater than Shmuel. He's not greater than Hillel b'chochma over minyan. The answer is hachakama. What he means is exactly that. You could say it means ima yashar chayil yosim Hillel. If I had strength as far as chochma and minyan greater than Hillel, avatlinay, then I would go and revoke the whole concept of prosbel. It was against it because he figured it's basically you're making a mitzvah of the Torah, a dead letter. You're saying that minat Torah there's supposed to be shmitas ksavim, and now you're saying that there's not going to be shmitas ksavim, and people don't even realize the whole concept that the loan would have been canceled. Think about it. You know, we do it now every year at the beginning of Shemitah and before Shemitah and after it. We get up in front of the people by a Torah Sandorim and we say the nusach of the prosbel. And we completely forget about the concept. And midoraisa, the any loans that we had outstanding would have been canceled.
But we're doing it fine.
But still, the fact is, minat Torah, those loans should be canceled. So Shmuel's holding it's not really right. It's one thing, especially according to Tosfos that was saying that Hillel just took something that existed. According to Rashi, that Bechlal didn't exist before Hillel's takana. So what are you doing? You're creating a new thing out of whole cloth that didn't even exist d'oraisa, and you're using it to override a din in the Torah. Even according to Tosfos's possibility is fine. Until then, you could actually physically give your shtoris to Beis Din or whatever. But now you're saying that you're making such a loophole over there, really, that it's completely overriding the din of the Torah. You're making it a thing every 7 years on a regular basis. So yes, Shmuel didn't like the idea.
So therefore, so again, so first the Gemara thought when he says Iyayashuchayo means if I had the strength, meaning if I was able to influence the entire Jewish people. Now we're saying that no, maybe just means if I had the greater Chochmah and Minyan than Hillel, then I would do that. That still doesn't show whether he holds that the Takana was only for Hillel's times or for later generations as well. Okay. Rab Nachman Omer. Now Rab Nachman, on the other hand, disagrees with Shmuel. He says, on the contrary, Akainena, I would uphold the concept of a prosable. He did hold of the concept of it. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, Akaimena? Homikayim Makoy, it already exists. Shmuel, Rab Nachman doesn't need to strengthen it. And the answer is, Hochikomer, Ema Ben Milsa, I would say, Rab Nachman says, if I have the ability to make this well known and accepted among the Jewish people, then I would further reinforce what Hillel's Takana and say about it something that nobody ever did until now, the Afagav Deloy Kosu, to say that even though the prosbul was not written, to Kosu Dummy, that it should be considered as though it's written. So yes. Hillel's Takana would have actually been to go to Beis Din and write out a document that says, Moistrani Lachem, etc. So now Rav Nachman is saying, I would, if I had my way about it, I would actually say that you could just verbally say it in front of Beis Din. And that would be good enough. And that would be good enough, which is how we do nowadays, right? So now there is a machlokus rishonim within that. In fact, Rashi seems to say that according to Rav Nachman, you wouldn't even need to say something in Beis Din at all. Maybe the Meiri understands Rashi to be saying that you wouldn't even need to actually say the declaration of Prusbo at all. The Rosh says, at least Rav Nachman means, you wouldn't need to say it in front of Beis Din, you just wouldn't need to write it. So there were times, you're looking Shulchan Aruch on the Nosei Kelim on it, there were times, the Alter Rebbe mentions it in Hilchos Halva, there were times when people had gotten careless with this kind of thing of saying a prosbul or of writing or even saying it, and they could be soimach on maybe on this idea that we're saying that according to Rav Nachman, maybe it wasn't even necessary to say it, or it would automatically renew itself every Shemitah. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe says, and in previous posting before him say, it still is better not to be soimach on that, but rather to follow the more straightforward understanding of Rav Nachman and say that you at least have to say it, which is why we do that, which is why we do it on Erev Rosh Hashanah. So we see, in other words, so Shmuel was against the whole concept of prosbul, and one wants to minimize it as much as possible, whereas Rav Nachman is more in favor of it. Okay, so the Gemara asked Iboilahu. So now we have a question. When we said that the prosbul is ulbana d'daini, what is this? Hi ulbana lishna chutzbahu. Is it an expression meaning chutzpah? So in other words, Shmuel is saying the dayanim are acting in a chutzpahdik way, taking away money from one person and assigning it to another without a good reason. Yes, hefka based in hefka, but they still shouldn't just be doing it willy nilly like that.
But
that's the point. In other words, they're saying that this debt would have been canceled by Shemitah, and instead they're saying no, you have to go pay it back because the guy wrote a prosbul. So Shmuel might be saying that's a chutzpahdika thing. Yes, I understand that Hillel made the takana, but it's a chutzpahdika thing for the dayanim to still continue doing it nowadays when Shmuel's when Hillel's concern that people are not lending one another money is not as much of an issue nowadays. Does he mean that? Or maybe doesn't mean it's a lotion of calmness. In other words, that he's saying they made it either the dayanim made this thing to make things easier for themselves. They don't have to work. They don't have to make sure to. The Beis Din doesn't have to call in every group of loivim and malvim and tell them it's before Shemitah, pay up, because otherwise it's going to be canceled by Shemitah and so forth. So therefore, so just that it makes things easier for the dayan. So we can prove that the word ulbana is a lashon of chutzpah. The Omer Ula, Aluva Kala Shazinsa B'Kerev Chupasa. Ula says how chutzpahdik is the Kala who was Mizana right there in a chuppah, referring to the Jewish people, by Har Sinai. We're still by Har Sinai and we worship an eagle. Omer of Mori, Brod Bas Shmuel, and Rav Mori, the son of the daughter of Shmuel, says, although Rashas is called that because you have the famous thing, we talked about it before, that Shmuel's daughter was kidnapped and raped by a guy.
And later on, this goy actually became a ger. The Gemara calls him he when they issu giyora, and whether they married or not, I'm not sure, but whatever. But in any case, she became pregnant and she had a son. But because his father was not considered his father in halacha, therefore they called him Ramori Brod Bas Shmuel, or sometimes it's called Ramori Baruch,
which means
Ramori, the son and the son of the daughter of Shmuel, or Ramori, the daughter of the son of Rachel, because that was her name. Well, just in other words, they didn't want to call him by his father's name. They because his father is not really considered his father in halacha. Anyway. So the Morid brother Bas Shmuel said, Micro, what's a pasuk that expresses that we by Har Sinai are considered like a kala in her chuppah? The pasuk says, Ad Sham Melech B'Mesiboy, while the king was yet at his feast, at his party, Nirdi Nosan Rechoy, my neod, which is a fragrance, a spice, like you have in the ingredients of the Ketonis, Nosan Recha gave away its fragrance, meaning that while the king, while Hashem is still at his party by Har Sinai, and the Shechina is still there, and then Rashi points out they only traveled from there almost a year later, Chofir. They came to Har Sinai, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and they remained there for almost a year until Chofir. So the Egel took place right in the middle of that. So even while the Shechina was still there, Nirdi Nosan Recha, my Neod, gave away its good fragrance. So you see that the pasuk itself is comparing the Jewish people at that time to a kala and her chuppah who's mezana. So the point is we see aluva means chutzpah dik. So we see uba nedaini means a chutzpah of the dayan. But Omar Rava, adayin chavivusa hu gabon. Rava says it's true. Nevertheless, you still see the beloved way that Hashem speaks of us in the pasuk. Dichtiv nosan v'leksiv isriach. The pasuk says that the pasuk uses almost like a euphemism. The fragrance gave away, the neod gave away its fragrance rather than using a more blatant word like isriach. It became smelly because, in other words, even then Hashem wants to talk as affectionately as possible about the Jewish people. Tosfos says, okay, it's not going to say isriach maybe because that's an ugly word and the Torah doesn't use ugly words where possible, but still it could have said ozav and abandon its fragrance, nosan. And now the word nosan can mean to give away. It actually gives an example of it. Nonetheless, though, it makes it sound like it gave forth its fragrance rather than it gave away its fragrance. So it's still a more beloved way Hashem talking about the Jewish people. So since we mentioned the word aluva, the Gemara mentions in this connection another drasha involving that word. Tana Rabbanan, haneh lovin ve'en oven, people who allow themselves to be insulted and they don't insult others in return. People are chutzpedik to them, and they're not chutzpedik back towards them. Shemin chepasim, they hear people making fun of them, in meshivin, and they don't answer back. Oisin me'ava, they serve Hashem out of love. Usmeichin b'yisurim, and they're happy with the yisurim they get from Hashem because they realize that it's meant to fix things up for them. On such people, the pasuk is va'oyav of ketzeis Hashemish begurasoi. Those who love Hashem will be like the sun when it shines forth in its full strength. Meaning, they have that bracha that they have that tremendous strength and that tremendous power that Hashem gives through them. One point is actually that's brought why the comparison to the sun. We know the famous thing: moon complained, Eif shaloshnei melachim sheishtam shebekeser echad, but the sun didn't speak up to try to defend itself. So it was an example of anel lovim veinu ovim. He doesn't know that. He doesn't know yet. Of course, Hashem is going to tell the moon lachiu mati asatmech that Hashem is going to stick up on its behalf. So therefore, but it's quiet. It's not going to reply back when the moon is trying to put it down. And therefore, a person who acts in that way is also has that bracha as well. Marsha points out also you have the Sukkim in Kapitol Yud Tes and Hashemayim Masapim Kvayt Kael that describes the sun is happy to do what Hashem wants. So we see also a person like this who has this midah is also he's serving Hashem with simcha and he has that tremendous power that the Torah gives him, Malchus and Mamshallah and so forth. One interesting connection between this and the previous thing about Aluva Kala, besides that they both have the same Shoresh, Ayin Lamed Beis, is as a result of the Cheta Egel, from then on, the Goyish nations always make fun of us. Look what lowlifes you were. Your God just revealed himself to you and gave himself you and gave him your Torah, and you went and worshiped an Egel. And we hear those insults from them, and we don't respond back in kind to tell them what lowlifes they really are instead. So that's exactly, and they love him, vayinim ovim, and we get a tremendous schar from Hashem for that. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, talking more about the dinim of Prusbul. And then.